Hello and welcome to Smash Notes, a podcast about podcasts. As you know, every time I release a podcast, I try something new, and this week is no different. This week, instead of doing one podcast with many different episodes in it, I'm going to do many different podcasts with one or sometimes two episodes each. By the end of the week, we should have a clear idea of whether you like this or not and proceed accordingly. As always, if you have particular feedback, feel free to yell at me on Twitter or email community@smashnotes.com. All right, let's get started. The first segment that I'd like to talk to you about is an interview between James Bishara and Eric Ries. James is the founder of the company called Tilt, or was the founder of a company called Tilt, and now has a podcast called Below the Line. Eric is New York Times bestselling author. He is the founder of the Lean Startup Movement, and now he's the founder and CEO of a company called Long Term Stock Exchange. I highly recommend you check out Smash Notes for this episode because Eric shares a ton of great gems that he's learned about startups over his 20-year startup career. Things like the dangers of consuming media-driven startup narrative, the challenges of the concept of overnight success, and the inverse of that, how it takes 10-plus years to actually build a successful company. But first, I'd like you to hear this term they may have invented on the podcast, which they called toxic founder image. Take a listen at what it is and how it's preventing, especially first-time entrepreneurs, from seeking help when they're most needed.
Startups eventually blow up and there's some kind of problem. I think you can trace a lot of that to, you know, the people cracked under the psychological stress of doing it. And I just like that, it really does not have to be that way. I think that a lot of that has to do with this kind of, you know, I was about to say toxic masculinity, but like not to get all jargony and whatever, but like this kind of, there's this like image that people are trying to keep up with and they prevents them from seeking help.
Toxic that, founder image.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you're not allowed to ask for help. That would be a sign of weakness. And there's so many investors who kind of play this game where if you ask them for help, that means that you don't really know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So, but they kind of want you to ask them for help. So then you have to kind of pretend that you don't really need the help. But you're talking about something. It's just like a lot of this duplicity and second, you know, like just stuff. And then everyone's comparing. Mm-hmm. It's why I originally started writing about vanity metrics. I remember I used to compete with a company that would put out press releases periodically and they would talk about the gross domestic product equivalent of all the user-to-user interactions on their platform. And it would be like some giant number and they'd be like, you know, if that was a country, we'd be the 12th biggest country in the world or something. And I would go to board meetings and our investors would be like, hey, what's our... how are we doing on that metric? Wow. And I sit there and be like, listen, that's a BS number. Like, if they wanted to tell us how much revenue they had, they would have reported that. Mm-hmm. But they didn't feel like that was worth reporting. So what does that tell us? It's obviously not that great. I would go this long speech about how that's not like a completely nonsense number. It makes no sense to compare apples to oranges. And GDP is such a, just like a very technical metric. Right. It means something really specific. This is not actually a country. It doesn't have an economy. Blah, 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 blah. And my investor would always be like, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. But what is ours anyway? Just out of curiosity, right? It's like everyone's got this like inferiority complex. They're doing so awesome and I'm never doing as good.
Right.
And it wasn't actually until I became kind of, I don't even know what to call it, like a mentor to a lot of founders, that I got to go behind the scenes and see what's actually going on. And even in the most successful companies that are the most iconic that you can imagine, where the people are making money, you can't even, like having success that most of us could only ever dream of. Mm-hmm. And there's like dysfunction everywhere and there's problems everywhere. And it's like, it's never easy. And you don't, you know, I eventually realized like, well, everyone's projecting this positive image, but it's very misleading. You can't compare your internal narrative to their external narrative. That's not appropriate. But then you're like, but then what can I compare it to? Because no one tells me the internal narrative. It's like, it's actually extremely challenging.
If you've ever done a startup, you know how ridiculous and yet so true all of this sounds. That sometimes if you want to ask UVC a question and you need help, that the last thing you want to do is actually go and ask them, because that indicates that you don't know what you're doing. And there's plenty of companies coming to them saying that they're crushing it, killing it, and doing super awesome. And so you end up being disadvantaged by asking questions that could help you and grow your business. In fact, when you're done with this podcast, and I'll share it in the episode notes, you should check out the answer to the question, what are the most successful startups hiding from the world? Because this will confirm just how dysfunctional successful startups are versus how they are perceived. And also, if you don't have a startup, but you're thinking about starting one, look for the question that says, what should you know before starting a company? Because Eric gives a really good answer as to what the startup roller coaster is like and what you should know before you dive headfirst. And honestly, this whole episode might be 90 minutes long, but it's really good. So I encourage you to go and listen to the whole thing, because I think it's going to be very valuable to you, whether you're doing a startup now or thinking of doing startup in the future. And now, having said all of that, to give us hope, I'd like to share another episode from a podcast called Give First. It's a podcast by Brad Feld and the Techstars team, where they talk about successes and failures and startup advice with their founders, mentors, etc. This particular episode is Brad Feld talking to Mark Nagar and Dave Mayer about rural Colorado and startups outside of big cities, big hubs. In case you don't know, Brad Feld is an investor, the founder of Techstars, and he's based out of Boulder, Colorado. Meanwhile, Mark Nagar is the founder of Startup Weekend, a hugely successful community that grew global. And now Mark is based out of Telluride, Colorado, a tiny little town where he's working on encouraging local startups and funding local startups to do business out of small town Colorado. Here's them talking about how and why the landscape for startups in small towns is changing for the better.
Mark? Yeah, I'd say, 10 years ago, it would have been hard to imagine the level of density around entrepreneurs, as Dave kind of hinted at in their valley. But you'd be surprised, the number of people that are freelancers or entrepreneurs or have been in the entrepreneurial world and now looking for kind of a change of pace. You find some incredibly accomplished people in these small towns, and likely they're the people who grew up here, who went off, had careers, and came back, and they're looking to participate in different ways as entrepreneurs again, as investors. And you end up with just a vast resource of this intellectual and financial and network capital in these small towns. And I truly believe it's not just the mountain towns. It's the Montroses, the Grand Junctions, the Durangos. I know for those of you not familiar with Colorado, look them up. They're about 6 hours from the Front Range. They really are kind of in the middle of nowhere. But we have proof. We just recently had a tech company called GitPrime exit for $170 million out of Durango. We had Mercury Payment Systems. I think it's one of the, is it four unicorns that have come from Colorado history, also came from Durango. So you kind of have this level of activity that's already happening in these communities. And I think it's just an amazing opportunity to come in and put a little more organization, community building, a lot of what we've learned in the big cities over the last decade in startup communities 1.0, if you will.
I think for me, it's sort of borrowing a phrase from the Grand Junction, Colorado Chamber of Commerce, which is the Colorado you are always promised, and that applies, sort of fill in the blank, right? It could be the Kansas you are always promised. For me, it's about quality of life, right? And broadband, and the fact that people can work from wherever they want now, and all you need is a laptop and a great internet connection and a great idea, and obviously an ability to execute and ability to build a great team around you. And, obviously we have an embarrassment of riches in Aspen and Telluride and these kinds of places, but it doesn't matter. It really is fill in the blank rural Kansas and, rural UK, rural Wales. I was just in Kelowna in Canada, which is sort of wine country, but I think it's about 100,000 people, but they're building a strong but small but mighty tech ecosystem. And I was really, really impressed with the entrepreneurial ecosystem there. And same with much smaller communities in Fernie and in Revelstoke. And there is, Startup Canada little outposts. And, I think it's a matter of creating your own reality, surrounding yourself with people who are super passionate about raising their families, or just, living the lifestyle that they really want, and go mountain biking during the day, go skiing first thing, get that powder day, and then work on your side hustle or your business, for however many hours you feel is necessary.
I found this segment particularly appealing because of that thing they said at the end, how startups in small towns are now doing that not just because they can, because they got the mentors, the funding, but also because they take their life into their own hands. And if the founders want to go ski for 3 hours in the morning and then get in the office and work on their startup, that's what they're able to do. And I think that's amazing. As someone recording this podcast from Seattle, you know, the land of Microsoft, Amazon, and now every big company you can name, it sounds magical to be able to go and have a life and work on your startup out of small town with creative, intelligent, you know, wonderful people. Anyways, this concludes this week's first episode of Smash Notes for this week. There's going to be one tomorrow and one the day after. Check back. Let me know what you think. community@smashnotes.com. Yell at me on Twitter @SmashNotes. Or if you can, go to iTunes and leave Smash Notes a 5-star review so that more listeners find about this podcast and I have more reasons to do more of them. Lastly, if you're a podcaster, I know some of you have been waiting to get your episodes onto Smash Notes. Please bear with me. I'm going to release a couple more features to the Smash Notes website this coming week, and then I'll be able to onboard you and get your episodes onto the site. All right, till tomorrow.